Thanks for listening to the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weeknight from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern, 7 to 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every night on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon on Fox Sports Radio.
Fox Sports Radio, the Jason Smith Show with my best friend, Mike Harmon.
Oh!
Live from the Francisco Lindor Studios.
Oh, boy.
As the Mets have come to terms with Lindor, who set a deadline of tomorrow, or I'm going to play out this season and be a free agent. I'm not going to negotiate. And the Mets said, okay, we'll give you the money. 10 years, $341 million for Lindor. In an act of pettiness that I just love, he gets $1 million more than Fernando Tatis Jr., who signed for $10 and $340 million with the Padres a few weeks ago. This is Steve Cohen saying, I really want to win. While we were breaking this down, we have a lot to get to on this story. Steve Cohen himself just put a tweet out about 10 minutes ago that just says, you're welcome. That's it. It just said, you're welcome. You knew the news was breaking. It was out. You're welcome. And I know that, he's had his issues outside of the baseball diamond with everything going on and stocks and everything going on with GameStop. That's clearly something that hasn't gone away. It's gone away from the headlines. But when it comes to baseball, and I say this all the time, right, because we talked about Lindor for a bit, and is that when you have a bad owner, you really are stuck. When you have a great owner, anything is possible. Because when you have a great owner, an owner who will spend for championships, that doesn't really care about, hey, I'm worried about making money here, because a lot of owners are, right? As many owners that say, no, I just want to win, they're worried about keeping making money. They want to continue to own a baseball team so they can walk around and be one of 30 people in the world to say, I own a baseball team. When you have an owner that will spend and will do whatever's necessary and will make a place a destination for people to want to come play, that is worth everything, because usually you don't see owners change. Maybe in your lifetime of being a sports fan, you see teams change, what, three times maybe with owners? Four times? I mean, maybe a little bit more now because, teams are, with the way business is evolving now, it's happening. But maybe this happens. If you live 80-some-odd years, you see it maybe three or four times, right? And so it's a big deal when someone buys your team. When you have a bad owner, everything that you think is attainable is not, because if they don't step out to make sure the team is doing its best to win, if they're not stepping out to try to get players, if they're continually telling their general manager, you have X amount of dollars to spend and don't go over, I'm not paying the luxury tax. Hey, we like this player. He wants $100 million. We're only going to offer $85 million. But we're not going to get him if we're, $100 million, that $15 million too much, we're not going to do it. You get a reputation, and suddenly your team becomes a place that nobody wants to go play. All right, that's what it was like for the Knicks for the longest time. Dolan, nobody wanted to go, I don't want going to the Knicks. And they're still having trouble getting anybody, and they're trying to get by now with, hey, we finally hit it with a couple of guys in the draft, and Julius Randle, who's been traded three times. So it's a really big deal when you have an owner that will do what it takes to put a winning team on the field. And I show you the difference between the Mets under the Wilpons, who Sandy Alderson quit because he couldn't stand working for the Wilpons anymore. He couldn't stand going into free agency, and they go, well, this is the money you have to spend, but I got to get a catcher and a first baseman and two bullpen, and I got to get a starting pitcher. This is the money you have. We're not going to go over this. And it's awful. How do you build a winning team? You can't. The guy quit because he couldn't stand working for the Wilpons anymore. He used to tweet about the nickel and diming he had to do when he was driving to Florida for spring training. I don't have this money that is approved for me to rent a car, so I have to do it myself and then put that. He used to tweet a lot. Then he stopped doing it, but he used to do that. I'm like, oh my goodness, this is just terrible.
No, that's good business, man.
Yeah, and then he quit.
Put it on him. Get those expense reports. Buy yourself, because you're the rich guy. You get to keep that money and draw interest on it. You don't have to pay out all these expenses. Put it all in one fell swoop.
So the guy quits, right? You said swoop, swoop, swoop. Look, listen, we'll get to Nike sneakers coming up in a few minutes because there is a big story with that. But, you know, so then the guy quit. Obviously, he was going through, you know, he went through cancer and he fought and battled and won his battle with cancer, which is great. And then when the Mets get sold, Steve Cohen says, hey, Sandy, you want to come back? Yeah. The Wilpons aren't there. I want to go back to New York. You want to spend? I want to spend. I want to go win. All right. He's a guy that was a great. He was a great executive with the A's when they had no money to spend. I couldn't wait to see what Sandy Alderson would do with the Mets when they actually gave him money to spend, except when he went to New York the first time they said, yeah, sorry, we're going to act like we're a small market team. Steve Cohen has changed everything, right? When an owner comes in that right away is engaging with the fans on social media, what do you think we should do for this year? Who should we go get? You know, who do you like in free agency? And just responding randomly to different people who say things. It's a new day. When he says, I want to sign all these guys to new contracts, it's a new day. Because the Mets knew they were getting nickel and dime playing for the Wilpons. And it was a rough place to be. They were lucky to have the talent that they did. They drafted somewhat well, which is why they are where they are. But when a new owner shows up, anything is possible. So now the image of the Mets is they got big pocketed owner who's going to spend money. Now all these guys like Conforto and players who are looking for extensions saying, hey, this is going to happen for us. It is a fun place to go play. They have gotten their franchise player who's going to be their identity for 10 years. But it goes back to the fact that when your owner is a good owner and he puts out all the vibes of wanting to win and doing things the right way on the field, everything changes right away for your franchise. There is no quicker way to do it. It's not quicker to draft a quarterback and put him in day one. It's not quicker to go and draft a superstar player and put him in your opening lineup in the NBA in day one. The quickest way is when you have an owner come in that says, I'm ready to spend. Let's do it. Let's make the team better. It happens overnight. All right. And the Mets went from here's a team that they underachieved. They had talent. Now, hey, they're a World Series contender. They make the best trade of the offseason. They bring in the best shortstop in baseball. And it all happened like that. And that's how big it is when you have an owner like Steve Cohen that will be that kind of representative of the team.
Yeah, it's a decided difference, and hope is a dangerous thing, but you at least are showing, hey, we're committing to bringing in top talent and retaining top talent. Did they need to react quite so quickly to the I'm not doing this tomorrow? So yeah, get him another offer and give him whatever he wants. I don't know about that. The negotiation part of the baseball side, I'm raising my hand going, really? But I guess when you're worth what he is, even if it was another $25 million or $40 million over what he wanted to pay, it's a rounding error. So, you know, for goodwill, for Lindor to come in and become the face of the franchise next to Pete Alonso, because everybody loves Pete Alonso, right? Because he looks like an everyman. A mountain of an everyman, mm-hmm. but an everyman. Sure. Certainly not a chiseled body, you know, hey, look at this supreme athlete. I mean, he's a guy. He's dad bod, right? He's 7 inches or 9 inches taller than I am. That kind of thing. And the average American male, I guess, is how I would put it. But, you know, it also changes the identity from, all right, all our pitchers. Like, they could go and work, and we don't have to be hanging on their every start like they're the savior. We talked about Matt Harvey briefly earlier. Remember, every start, every fifth day, and you helped perpetuate it. So I partially blame you. But it became Matt Harvey Day, and it was looked at as if he doesn't dominate, the world is off its axis, right? We've got problems because you weren't generating runs. Now you're trying to attract free agents. You're certainly fighting with the Yankees for the headlines and attention. Right. That's the other part of this is, all right, we know to get that identity, to get people excited, we need name brands and we need guys that people are going to get excited about. And as you reopen ballparks, because it's not coincidental. We're also just getting the reports of last year. All right. Where were the top jersey sales? Right. It's all about figuring out how do you monetize the other parts of things. Three of the top five were Dodgers. Right. Mookie Betts was first. And then I think Bellinger and Kershaw, even though Kershaw has been there for a million years, he was still top five. So you're looking at trying to figure out, all right, here's all the ancillary revenue streams that come out of having a superstar too. So while it's a commitment on the baseball side, he's a businessman. He recognizes the amount of money to be made, not only in tickets, not only in contending and what that means for you, right? A playoff game and how many millions that means. No, no, no. It's also in, all right, how quickly can we get Francisco Lindor Mets bobbleheads in every alternate uniform? How quickly can we get the jerseys in stock? All of those things. And make sure that we've got enough of them because we've made a commitment. So now people will be looser with their wallet, right? Because if a guy's on a one-year deal and you don't know, right, if he would have gone in tomorrow and it's a fight, it's a, well, I'm not paying $190 for this jersey. He may not be here. Now it's like, wait, he signed a 10-year deal? Yeah.
You're pretty safe buying it. You can go buy your Francisco Lindor jersey.
No, but that's it. You go and you cough up the money because now they've put an investment in, so you feel like you can be invested as well, right? It's like putting out a great, you know, synopsis. You know, here's my prospectus is what you get in the mail, right? Every time you move, you know, some money around in your 401k, anybody out there, you do a little bit of investing, you add a new stock, what happens? You get something in the mail from whatever brokerage saying, here's all the ins and outs of this stock and how we operate and blah, blah, blah. And maybe you throw it out. Maybe you actually spend a couple of minutes to read it. That's kind of what you did here. It's like, here's the prospectus of the next decade. Do you like where we're going? Which is why he sent out that tweet, which looks... I can't repeat what the first words were when I saw it. And as Frostburg, you and I started exchanging it, not FCC compliant. But you know what? I always appreciate and celebrate swagger, you know, across sports. You know, be you, right? If you're going to be brash and outspoken, right? We've got a promo running about what we talked about with Urban Meyer the other day when he's complaining about all the different things with the NFL and adjusting to free agency and all of these processes. Like, you know what? If that's who you're going to be that guy. Likewise, if Cohen's going to be the outspoken, look at me, I got more money than God owner. Be that guy too, and just be consistent with it and keep the checks flowing because it'll keep you from getting towards the edge, which is always good, even though we'll have a mid-season swoon that we'll have to watch from afar. And maybe we'll get more video this year of watching you die a little bit with your team.
You know, listen, there's no dying going on. We're one of the top five teams in Major League Baseball. Unfortunately, all of them play in the National League. I mean, you're in the path of least resistance there in the American League. Hey, the White Sox could win it.
White
Why?
Sox,
because the American
Twins.
League stinks.
How dare you? What are you talking
League
about?
Stinks. Hey,
it
stink
does not.
Out loud. If we had a National
Houston,
League.
Houston,
come
Angels.
On. They don't have the signs anymore.
Still,
did you really
still
just say the Angels? Did you really just say the
Angels? The Angels are a very popular you pick for popular Angels. People this year.
If there was a National League, American League, Big East, ACC Challenge Week, we'd win every series. It wouldn't even be close.
Oh, good
we
Lord.
Would crush it. They'd put the Mets up against the Yankees, and the Yankees would get swept. And Gerrit Cole would go, how did I lose 1-0 to DeGrom? Oh, because he pitched a no-hitter because he's that good. He's so much better than
hey,
I am.
Hey,
that's
Smith.
How it would go.
Hey, did Buddy Boeheim hit a shot yet?
Oh, wait, why you gotta go to college basketball? Buddy Bam at more shots.
You're
the
one that brought it to college basketball. Did you not listen to the example you just gave?
Yeah, but
good
but,
God,
but I didn't say Buddy Bam. Why you gotta go to Buddy Bam? How many shots did Northwestern make in the tournament?
As many as Buddy Bam did in that final game.
Stop, he carried us through the first two games. Just stop.
I said in that final game.
He carried us. Listen, everybody's transferring, okay? We have no players, right? Everybody's gone. We only have Buddy Boeheim. He's the only one left. He's the
Help
only
us,
guy
Buddy
coming
Boeheim.
Back.
Buddy Boeheim, you're our only hope. Get those T-shirts made where he's standing there talking to R2-D2. Go, go.
He's the only one left. Syracuse is going to play 1-on-5 next year. Everybody's transferring.
I don't know. Sometimes they look like they were standing around waiting for Buddy to do something spectacular. So I don't know how much different that'll look.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
What's up, everyone? It's me, three-time NFL All-Pro Sean Merriman, and I have a new sports podcast called The Lights Out Podcast with Sean Merriman. This podcast is special to me as I get a chance to talk to some of the best who've ever done it on the field or the track. So whether it's talking to a Super Bowl champion or a NASCAR Cup Series champion, The Lights Out Podcast will bring it to you the only way I know how to. I'm giving you the best insight from the best who've ever done it. Listen to Lights Out with Sean Merriman on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you can get your podcast.
Jason, did I mention the Knicks lost?
Yeah, thanks a lot. Okay. I appreciate that. You know what? You think you're ever going to be on the show again after that? After UCLA won last night? Had you on as a guest?
Ooh.
I was being nice to you.
Oh, you're
Mike
right.
And I were being nice to you.
That's true.
Yeah.
All right.
I'll
treated be on my
you
best.
With respect, even though, you know, everything was just a one-sided bit of analysis.
You're fired.
Yeah, and you know what? Our next guest is going to hate you too, Brian Fenley.
Oh, my God.
I guarantee it. I would say thanks a lot, but I'm really not saying thanks. Joining us now on the hotline, our official legal analyst here at Fox Sports Radio. Check her out at CBS as well. National correspondent, two-time Emmy winner, and as big a Knicks fan as I am, so she's as depressed as I am after losing to the bleeping Timberwolves. Amy Dash is with us. What's happening, Amy?
I am so disappointed, Jason. What just happened? How did that just happen?
I know.
We were up by like 12 points, and all of a sudden, in the last couple minutes, it's like a blur. It was very traumatizing. My heart's in my chest. So sad.
Wow. All right, so two questions that go with that. Number one, how do you recover, and how much do teams like this and performances like this affect the way you view the legal world? Do you start becoming more literal in your interpretations? Or, I mean, how does that work?
Well, they affected in that I was contemplating, like, if this game's still going on, do I go on the radio show and talk about the legal stuff, or do I stick with the game? And I was, like, kind of leaning towards stick with the game.
No. I'm glad it went the other way. No. I told you on Twitter, I have to do the show, you have to do the show. That's how it works.
Right, but it was a one-point game, and there
yes,
were, like,
I know.
30 seconds left. So if that was the case and I had to make a choice, the choice is probably not going to be in your favor.
Well, it would have been pause the game, walk out of the room, because, I mean, we had a contract. It was on social media that you were joining us at that time.
I know. I probably would have just had to talk through the game with you on the radio.
Yeah. You know, I always look at it this way, you know, because I'm a big Mets fan, too. And there's games where, like, the Mets play a day game and they lose like 10-1. I'll come on the air and I'll go, well, you know what? At least the Mets got a big ass kicking out of the way early and I could enjoy my day. So I look at it this way. At least the Knicks lost for you to go on and enjoy the rest of your night. And come on the show with us. It didn't affect your appearance with us on the show at all.
No, I'll be a complete professional, but my heart's broken. And, you know, it reminds me of the 90s. Like, I used to stay up as a kid and watch these games, and I was so invested in the team. And when they were close like this, and like, I thought they had this game. I mean, it's the Timberwolves. They should have had this game, right? But it was just, I could see the young guys. Like, as things started going downhill, I could see them getting into their head, like R.J. Barrett shaking his head. And really the only one who kind of stayed focused was Taj Gibson. And I just thought, wow, I'm going to chalk it up to two things. One, these are young guys who, like, just don't have the mental toughness to be able to come back when, you know, when the tables turn. And two, the coach, Thibodeau, he wasn't running any plays as things started going downhill. He should have stopped and started, you know, running some organized plays, because it just became sloppy.
Hey, Amy, I don't know. If this legal thing doesn't work out for you, how about being an NBA analyst? That's some good hot takery right there. I like that.
Well, you know, I could probably do both.
You could,
but here's that idea.
Here's the thing. I didn't spend nearly the money on school that you did, and I'm doing this. You're like letting go, why did I spend all that money on school and my law degree and all this? I could have just done this, and I could have saved all kinds of cash.
Nah, multiple revenue streams,
baby.
Well,
I think it's gonna be you and me. I think you and I have a spot there, because some of those guys are getting a little bit old. You know, it's time for some fresh blood behind the desk.
All right, there
nice.
We go. Look,
there
Amy Dash throwing down the gauntlet. All right, so to get to the couple of things here, you know, legal-wise, you know, we'll get to Deshaun Watson in a second, but we saw the decision today made regarding Tiger Woods and his car accident. Initially, when the car accident happened, the sheriff's department in Los Angeles said, we talked to Tiger Woods, and we didn't feel like he was under the influence of anything, and there's no charges filed in this case. It was clearly an accident, and it was all done before they had really actually examined things or gotten the black box. Today, the sheriff's department said detectives determined what caused the crash, but they're not going to release details because there are privacy concerns for Tiger Woods. So I ask you, does this make sense with privacy concerns? Why they aren't releasing? They're saying they have the reason, but they're not releasing it?
Well, it makes perfect sense because the sheriff and the L.A. County Sheriff's Office are named in these lawsuits over the Kobe Bryant affair with invasion of privacy. The lawsuits brought by Vanessa Bryant, and they're still going on, and the sheriff was actually a named defendant. So clearly they've changed their policy, and they're not going forth with all this information when it comes to celebrities because there's litigation. That's what they're scared about. I think, though, listen, it was the black box, so perhaps, I'm totally speculating here, but the black box tells the speed, right? So perhaps he was going a little bit faster than he was supposed to. It was a curvy road. It was unfamiliar terrain to him, and I think accidents were common on that stretch. They didn't test his blood, so it probably wasn't anything with alcohol or drugs because they didn't test for that. So if they're conclusively saying we have the reason here from the black box, maybe he was going a little bit faster than he should have. I'm not saying he was speeding, but he might have been going above the speed limit by a couple points. Who knows?
Opens it up to a lot of speculation, I guess, by saying, hey, Tiger and your team, the ball's in your court. They can kind of let speculation run rampant or curb it, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. They'll make that decision. Exactly. When he comes to, when he's like all with it, they said he didn't remember a lot of what happened, so.
Right. He didn't remember. And I just feel like the whole investigation has it really been an investigation? Like, have they really done everything that they normally do in situations like this? And I just don't know that I've seen that.
No, because they would have maybe tested his blood for drugs or alcohol, especially given his history when they realized that it was Tiger Woods. But also it was 7 o'clock in the morning. You know, the conditions were, as I explained them, that this was a place where accidents were common. He had hit a raised median, so no other cars were involved. And it was in an exact spot where there had been accidents before because of the way that the road is constructed. So maybe they didn't feel, or maybe they had to just get him to the hospital and get him help, so they weren't able to do the blood test. It could have been a variety of things, but you know, they could have done it.
All right, let's jump to the other story. Rusty Harden with these press release, and here's 18 massage therapists who support Deshaun Watson's claims, and then there's, you know, they're named and they've got quotes and everything. So the official count is what? Sitting here at 39 plus whomever else is not yet in here, including one woman that spoke to Sports Illustrated. So I guess at a minimum that gets us to an even 40. How does that play, you know, that we're now playing this out in public of, all right, I got more on my side, and we're basically tipping the scales of justice in the public opinion world?
Well, as ridiculous as it sounds, it's actually a really great technique. And it was something that I had been asked about last week. And they said, you know, what would you do if you're the defense attorney? And I said, you have to get character witnesses. So if he's coming with 21 people, you come with 21 people. If they're masseuses, you bring masseuses. And I guess lucky for Watson's camp, he had gotten lots and lots of massages, 40-plus masseuses.
Yeah.
So he had all these people that could come and back him. And like you said, they came out with their identities, which is really strong, in support of him. And so when it comes down to credibility, if you have, you know, these character witnesses to say, nothing like this ever happened to me, well, that really undermines any type of a prosecutorial strategy if this were to go to criminal court or even civil court, where the attorney's coming and saying, this was his modus operandi, this was his thing. He would get masseuses and he would target them and he would, you know, make sexual advances at them once he was in the room with them and he was naked. Well, now you can't really go full-fledged with that type of a legal theory to a jury or to a judge because you've got another 18, maybe more, masseuses coming and saying, well, that never happened to me. So it's interesting that he would go that route. But as I've seen, Rusty Harden sort of throwing everything up against the wall and seeing what will stick.
So when it comes to this, I look at every day now as seeing, okay, everybody's trying to win the day, right? We're trying to win the day. Here's a day where Deshaun Watson is scrubbing Instagram messages, and here's a day where Rusty Harden's got witnesses coming back saying Deshaun Watson's a good guy. I keep going back to when is this evidence going to go to the Houston Police Department? Because when Tony Busby says, oh, I don't trust the HPD, we're not going to do this, I scratch my head and go, what are they trying to accomplish then if this is not going to be something that eventually goes to the authorities?
That is you're right. That is off the wall. It's off the wall to say I'm going to bypass the police that are in charge of the jurisdiction where the alleged crime took place. After saying, by the way, which Busby said a week earlier, I'm going to the police. The police have contacted me. I'm working with a detective. I'm going to ask the prosecutor to have a grand jury convene. You need a police investigation for that to happen. So for him to say he's going to cooperate and then throw out all these excuses out of left field of, well, now I can't go because I ran for mayor and I called out the police chief, so I'm kind of worried that they're going to be biased. And, you know, Rusty Hardin's son has a connection, so I don't really trust the entire department, is just something I've never heard before. The only thing I can think of is that, you know, he's playing some sort of a game, and maybe he's delaying because they might be talking about a settlement, you know, behind closed doors. And once you go the criminal route, it might be harder for them to get a settlement. And maybe the women don't want to go the criminal route. At least some of them don't. And so I think he might be holding off and using this as an excuse. But to say we're going to go elsewhere, stand by, like who else would he go to? It doesn't make any sense to me.
The way to keep those 21 anonymous then is what we're looking at here, potentially part of the play. And that they don't want their business fully out in the public?
Yeah.
Is that it?
It could be part of it. But, I mean, listen, now, maybe they came forward and they filed the suits, and now that it's been such a publicity storm, they don't want to be attacked. They don't want to have a character assassination in public. Maybe it would hurt their business or be emotionally stressful for them. So they've decided, hey, let's just try to settle. Let's not run to the police department. But all along, he's had this campaign of, you know, this isn't about the money. Busby, I should say. This isn't about the money. These clients, they just want to stop this behavior. Some of them want to go the criminal route. They don't even want to settle on the civil side. And then he totally switches gears. So it's perplexing, to say the least.
Amy, I know we still have a ways to go on this. If you could crystal ball it for me here, how long will this process take and how do you think this is going to wind up ending?
It's hard to tell because if there's some sort of police investigation going on that we don't know about, or a grand jury secretly is convening and then there's criminal charges, well, then if he takes a plea deal in a criminal case, it could be over quickly. If it goes to trial, it could take years. On the civil side, if there's a settlement talks going on and he settles, it could be over tomorrow. If it goes through the civil route, it could take months or years. So it's really impossible to tell because we actually have to take it on a day-to-day basis. And right now it seems like they're playing all this out in a public forum.
On Twitter at Amy-TV, that is at Amy-TV, our official legal analyst here at Fox Sports Radio. Check her out on CBS, everywhere else. And pretty soon, NBA Insider concentrating on the New York Knicks. She will answer all your Knicks questions as well at Amy-TV. Amy, as always.
And I will continue to pressure RJ Barrett to work on his threes.
She was calling him out flat out. She was doing the at RJ Barrett.
By the way, he was great tonight. I think he heard me because he was great with his threes tonight. And that's why they had such a big lead, I think. Because they had all the scorers hitting their shots.
Yeah, and then he missed at the end.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, you know.
Amy, as always, phenomenal stuff. Love having you on. Thanks so much.
Thank you. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, we'll do it again. Bye, Amy.
I'll tell you, having her on, I feel like I always feel smarter when I have her on,
you know,
because she spent a lot of money because she's a lawyer. But, you know, because all day I'm sitting here saying to myself, boy, this Tiger Woods thing, you know, it just, I feel like they're protecting him, all of these things. And then she says, don't forget, they're under a lot of fire because of what happened with Vanessa Bryant, the publicity with the Kobe Bryant photos. And it's, oh, so this is where all the unspecified privacy issues come from because of the Kobe Bryant situation. Still doesn't excuse them for how they've handled this because they've wanted to protect Kobe. They've wanted to protect Tiger Woods the entire time rather than really tell us what happened. But this at least shows us, hey, this is why it's happening right now. And of course, they're not going to come out and say it and go, you know, we're in a lot of trouble because we did some stupid things. So we're just going to, you know, say this and then try to move on from it.
Well, that's the thing. It's apples and oranges in terms of what you're releasing, right? Because if I went and I wrecked myself in that spot, I don't know how much they're withholding Anything that's on that black box, anything I may have done or remembered later on, reaching for something I dropped, changing a radio station, texting, all of those, all speculative, of course. I would suspect they'd be front and center at a news conference going, man, that's the 12th or whatever number this year. Harmon, we have reason to believe XYZ. I don't think I'm getting the right to privacy necessarily that way and sharing photos of a crash scene. I think a bit different here, but you know what? Changes of policy. Sometimes it takes a horrific act and decision up top to make new policies and change protocols. So that's what we have here. And so now we anxiously await to see if Tiger Woods and his people ever want to come forward and give us any more details, which I suspect we will wait till long after I am gone.
Yes, it'll be one of those things like, oh, hey, Argo got declassified. Oh, boy, did you see Ben Affleck save everybody? I think that's kind of what we're looking at.
Yeah, 30 years from now, all of a sudden. By the way...
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
So while we've been hot and heavy on the Francisco Lindor contract, he is now officially a Met for the next 10 years, $341 million. Mets.
Is this a two ice cream night now or what?
Oh, I had ice cream during the day. I'm going to get ice cream after the show. I am completely going to I'm going to Pavilions before it closes, and I'm getting ice cream. They should name a flavor after Francisco Lindor. They should name it the Lindor truffle flavor. Boom. Oh, my God. I got to patent that because Lindor already has chocolate truffles. Lindor calls Ben and Jerry's. Boom, the Lindor flavor. Oh, that's
Lindt,
it right there.
But that's okay.
Huh?
Yeah. It's Lindt truffles, but yeah.
No, it's Lindor truffles. No, it's Lindor. Hang on. Lindor truffles. Yeah, Lindor truffles. Dude, right there. Boom. Lindor truffles. Lindor chocolate truffles. I'm looking at them right now.
Yeah, the company is Lindt. Sorry.
Right, but rich, melty flavor. Look, it says rich, melty flavor. Lindor chocolates.
Well, it just shows you what's going to happen to this investment. Good. It's going to melt away right down the drain. Evaporated, baby.
Wow. And I was thinking we could monetize this and have something fungible with Lindor chocolates and making money. Like you get a chocolate, you open it up, and you get a highlight.
Oh,
what
I
if
like
that's
that.
The, what if that's
NFT.
It?
You get, I,
yes,
I mean,
you get an
it
NFT.
Will expand beyond Top Shot, no question.
Yeah.
You I get mean, pretty soon you're going to be able to get the Thanos snap in a limited form. I mean, there's going to be so much. Your head's going to be spinning. Still not a jock strap, though.
Look, we've talked about that a lot. We'll have more on that coming up. Our big MLB predictions as well, coming up with opening day tomorrow. But a crazy story going on right now, because one of the most overcovered stories in sports has been the addition of Andre Drummond to the Lakers, right? He went from a guy who was, hey, you know, Andre Drummond's going to bring some interest in the trade market or buyout market too. Hey, Andre Drummond's going to be a big player to the buyout market too. Andre Drummond is going to save the Lakers. He's going to be the guy to come and save the team. I don't really care about his intangibles. I don't really care about his shot selection. He's a 17-13 guy, and I love the fact the Lakers went out to get him. This guy is an all-star player. Didn't really help the Lakers tonight as they fell to the Bucks 112-97. But there's a reason for that. He started the game, but he only played 14 minutes, leaving the game with some kind of foot injury. And it could potentially have a lot to do with the sneakers that he was wearing. It was really weird. He went through a couple of different pairs of sneakers before he didn't come back into the game. All right, now this is Dave McMenamin, who is an NBA, longtime NBA reporter for ESPN. He put this out earlier tonight. Drummond started the game in a pair of Air Jordan 11 IEs, right? So that's what he was wearing. Then he decided to switch to a pair of LeBron 16 lows, and he had to leave the game and take off his right sneaker. Now he's got a wrap on his big toe. So he went back to the locker room. It was thought that maybe he can come out and play, but listen, the Lakers were down by 15. You know, it wasn't going to happen. It turns out his night was over. He had a right toe contusion. X-rays were negative. Okay, so what happened? Hold on to your hats. Again, this is not for the squeamish.
Yeah,
but according
just
to
seeing it from Mark Medina.
Yeah, according to Dave McManaman and Mark Medina, Andre Drummond said, this is like from a movie,
buddy,
when they torture somebody. Andre Drummond said his whole toenail was gone after Brook Lopez stepped on his right big toe sometime in the first quarter tonight. I can't even imagine that. Dude, one, drink more milk. Milk will help you, man. Milk helps bones. It helps your nails. Helps everything. Drink milk. Milk, 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 milk.
Milk is for baby. Drink beer.
Man. I mean, well. First of all, the big question is the toenail a fungible token? Like, is an NFT? Like, can we?
I think he could probably make a market on that.
All right, like
someone would pay for Andre Drummond's toenail. I have no doubt.
But could I pay for something with Andre Drummond's toenail? Like, what could I buy with Andre Drummond's toenail?
Look, if we go back to Barter Town, maybe you can.
Can I defray the cost of Francisco Lindor's contract with Andre Drummond's big toe?
Yeah. I think it might be a small fraction of that overall contract, but sure.
Yeah, but this whole NFT situation is out of control. Someone may give me $150 million for it, and I'll say, hey, Steve Cohen, here you go. Take this money.
The potential is there. I mean, I'm not going to say it's not. All it takes is one, right? Just like it only took one guy to give Francisco Lindor $341 million. It took one guy to take Andre Drummond's toenail.
Oh, my goodness. And here's the thing is I don't know how long this injury would keep Andre Drummond out for. I don't think it's very long. It would depend on, you know, is the toe infected and how long and it's
just pain tolerance
in it. Yeah, but I don't know. Yeah, the pain tolerance is one thing, but like if it's infected, how long can he, you know, play on it safely without doing more damage to it? You know, and I can't believe it's that long. So it might only be a couple of days. You know, maybe they have to wait for a swelling to go down or whatever it is and treat it. But I mean, I got to think it's not that long. I would hope. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a doctor. This is a question for Dr. Chow. But, you know, I don't know that he gets that kind of question all the time. Hey, how long will it take you to come back from missing a toenail? I hope I never have to find that out because it's really, really painful. Apparently.
Well, I was going to say, for the show, if you wanted to do some experimentation, I'm sure you can get Fenley over there to hold a camera and narrate as you, you know, take one for the team.
Yeah, exactly. So this is the deal. So it shouldn't be very long for Andre. I just can't. Oh, I think of the toenail. What movie was it where they were pulling toenails off? Oh, God. Because I don't know why, but there's certain things I unfortunately have good visions of. And I just have visions of, like, being able to grab a nail and just pull it off.
There's actually a movie called Toenail.
Oh, is it really? Oh, wow, that's not, no. See, I was thinking more, he did it in The Fly. I think Goldblum did that in The Fly, right, when his body was changing, and he was, like, just pulling his nails off, going, oh, look at that. I think he did it in The Fly, I'm pretty sure.
How about that?
Wow, that's
crazy.
A big reference.
Look
I haven't referenced that movie in a long time.
Well, anytime you can get Goldblum into the mix, you've won.
That was Goldblum and Gina Davis, right, in The Fly? Yeah, okay.
Look at that.
So this is what's
going
on with
Weren't they also together in Earth Girls Are Easy?
Oh, dude, I think I've only saw Earth Girls Are Easy maybe once. I don't know, maybe.
Let's see if I'm right.
Boy.
I think I'm right.
I would say.
Yeah, I'm right.
Okay.
Jeff Goldblum, Jim Carrey, and Damon Wayans.
Wow, very nice.
And Gina Davis.
88,
and
Earth Girls Are Easy?
And Julie Brown, 1988.
Which Julie Brown? Downtown Julie Brown or Miss Julie Brown?
The other Julie Brown.
Miss Julie Brown.
Yes, Miss Julie Brown, the redhead.
Got it. Yes. Okay. I used to work with Downtown Julie Brown.
Wubba, wubba, wubba.
Do you want a great Downtown Julie Brown story? You want to go?
Sure,
I got a great Downtown
not?
Julie Brown story. Okay.
If you have a great one.
Oh, no. This is a great one. So when I worked with Julie Brown, she was really nice. And when she was on an NFL show on ESPN called Prime Monday, it's just a stupid name for a show. Who calls it Prime Monday? Right. So it was Prime Monday. And it was a show, it was the pre-show on before the Monday Night Football game that ESPN had, but the game was on ABC. Tirico was the host, and he had, I think Phil Simms was on it with him, and a couple other people. But there was a round table a part of it that had like Michael Wilbon and Skip Bayless and Mitch Albom, and it was kind of like the first iteration of First Take, right? Like, because they would debate sports topics, and so Downtown Julie Brown was a correspondent on the show, and she would go do pieces, and you know, they would throw to her in the studio, and then you know, she would talk about, like, she went and interviewed Michael Irvin, and she would talk about her piece and everything else. So something happened one night, and you know, I don't know what happened. I don't know what was going on, but there was a lot of tension on the set. And Julie Brown, I think I didn't like, they kept making her move, and they made her change the shirt she was wearing because it wasn't showing up well on camera or anything else. And it was, I could tell she was getting mad. I'm like, why can't you just go on and do this? Why can't you do this? And because I'm stage managing, right? So I'm on the stage, and they're telling me, Jason, can you tell Julie to move? All right, Julie, move here. Can you tell Julie to move over there? Julie, can you move over there? And she's like, why do I keep moving? Julie, can you move over there? Julie's got to change her vest. Her vest doesn't look good. She goes, I've worn this on TV for MTV. ESPN is saying you can't wear it. So she takes her vest off, and she puts on a new shirt, and they go, that shirt's too bright, she can't do it. She goes, I'm doing it. And she takes her shirt off and has her vest on and says, let's just go. And they go, all right. And they go, all right, we're ready to go. You know what, Jason, can you have her stand next to Mike Tirico? And I go, oh my God, she's going to kill me. And I go, Julie, can you stand next to Mike Tirico? And she walks over, and she screams into my microphone, and she goes, I don't want to bleep and stand next to Mike. And everybody stops, and they're staring at her. And she looks around, and she goes, I'm just kidding. I don't care. Yeah, I'll go stand next to Mike.
Wow. All right, that's a good ending. Thought she ended up decking you or something.
She just grabbed my mic and go, I don't want to stand next to bleeping Mike. And I was like, and everybody was just silent.
What did Wilbon do?
I'm just kidding. Now, they were on the side, and they were just talking to each other about what they wanted to do on the on the set, you know, what they're going to talk about later on. Yeah.
Well, because, you know, Wilbon's a proud Northwestern grad, well as St. Ignatius College Prep, Chicago.
Yeah. Oh, all right. Very good.
So you know, we're connected.
The one thing I remember from those guys doing the show, this is like in the mid-90s this show was, and you know, Tirico, they would talk football, then he would throw to it, and it would be Mitch Albom, and it would be Skip Bayless and Michael Wilbon, and usually somebody else. Like, it would be Leslie Visser, or it would be somebody else would come in. And I'll never forget this, because this tells me, yeah, of course, you know, these guys were going to like to be a yak fest, is that they, you know, one week, whoever was supposed to be the fourth person couldn't make it. Like, they got snowed in somewhere and couldn't make it. So they did it with just the three of them, and it was, you know, it was Albom, and it was Skip, and it was Michael Wilbon. So, of course, when there's three people instead of four, you get to talk a little bit more. So after the show, you know, the show was over, I could hear the producer say in their ears, go, hey guys, so things are done. Just want to let you know, I'm sorry we had to scramble around with this. How did you guys feel about just the three of you? Did you miss the fourth person? And they all just say, they couldn't say it fast enough. No, it was good. Just the three of it. It was good. The three of us. It was good. Oh, no. We didn't miss that fourth person at all. No, it was good. It was good. From then on, it was only three people. And it was only the three of them that were on the show.
Yeah. There you go.
Just right away. No.
So the originator here, I'm going to take you back to Chicago for a moment. The sports writers on TV, Rick Tellender, Bill Gleason, Bill Jouse, Ben Bentley, smoking cigars. They'd have guys that would sub in on occasion, and then they'd have owners and players and front office folks and other, you know, media members kind of pop in. And it looked like they were having a poker game that they just put a camera in. Like a smoky room, terribly lit, like you were under the lights on NYPD Blue. Like, if I could get DVDs of those, I would sit and watch it. Because they'd just start screaming at each other. Clearly, they had beef with each other from some other discussion at a ballpark or something that would spill into the table. And it's like, all right, this is going to escalate. Eventually, they're going to be stepping over there where it looks like it's more well lit for a fight. So it was kind of you know, the precursor of a lot of this fun stuff. So pretty cool. Mm.
Now the whole thing with Drummond, now we get all from the, you know, the MTV to the,
no,
the toenail ripped off.
Yeah.
Here's the thing is with getting Andre Drummond, right? And look, say he's out of the lineup for a couple of games, it's going to be okay. How do I feel about the Lakers? I am confident that they can finish sixth in the Western Conference with Drummond, right? He's a big deal for them, right? Because, again, I don't care about the analytics. He's going to be a 17-13 guy. He will buy in and play defense and fit in for a short period of time. He's never thrived when he's been the guy, but he only has to be kind of the guy for a little bit until AD and LeBron come back. So that's really when he's going to show his true value. But the Lakers have shown that we can beat the bottom feeding teams, and with Drummond, we can maybe win a couple of more games. So they can finish sixth. And I would pencil them in for sixth right now in the West, which would keep them out of the first round play-in games. Because let's face it, even if they win, you got a couple of teams that are right on the Lakers' tail that are going to pass them because they're better for the next month, month and a half, as the Lakers are going to be without AD and LeBron, right? The Nuggets are coming, man. They're playing really, really well. So are the Blazers. They got a lot better at the trade deadline. So they're both going to pass the Lakers. You know, they could pass them the next couple of days, but do I see the Mavericks suddenly going on a tear or the Spurs? Then you get into teams that are 500 out of the playoffs. No, that's not going to happen. The Lakers are going to be able to sit right around six, and that's where I expect them to enter the playoffs as the sixth seed.
I like that. Your optimism. Hey, they're going to be sixth. Just wear it, Laker fans. No, it's fun theater because they got a seven-game road trip coming up. So now we get to see how long is Drummond going to be out, right? It's one of the subplots to what's going in. This was your acquisition. You got a little more offense from Kyle Kuzma, but they didn't have really enough in the second half here as we watched the Bucks pull away, even though it was great to see Giannis and his brothers all playing together today. But it's a tough road. I think you're being optimistic because you're also assuming those other two guys come back fast enough to stop the free fall, you know, the elevator dropping and waiting on Superman or somebody above with enough strength to pull the cable and stop it. I don't know that it's there. I don't know. I'm curious about LeBron James and how fast he's back in the lineup. Because, you know, I've been bearish on Anthony Davis's return all along. I'm hopeful. Right, I want the best theater possible, and that means they're healthy and ready to go. Right, we're gonna battle the Clippers, playoff rondos over on the other locker room, and all of that stuff, and it's gonna be fun. Everybody crying and moaning about super teams or whatever. Shut up and enjoy the basketball for crying out loud. I'm tired of it. It's like arms race here, there, whatever. I hope he's healthy. I hope he doesn't get an infection, and I hope the toe heals. Right, yeah. It's a much more grisly story than the shoes were uncomfortable. That was the early start of the game. It's like, all right, he changed uniforms. Why are the shoes suddenly a problem? Well, he had a 7-foot guy step on his toe and drag as they tried to separate to cause a very painful injury that most of you will lose at least one or two moments of peace in your evening thinking about the pain. And he said he's just happy that the x-ray came back negative. That's why he's a tougher man than I am.
I'd be out for the year or possibly the decade with a ripped off toenail. Yeah. He's day to day. Really, I'd be done for a while, man.
They're 3.5 games ahead of the Mavericks, right? Mavericks have won two. Yeah, it's going to be a tough task. It's going to be good. Like I said, the final 2 months of the regular season, or a month and a half at this point, because tomorrow is April Fool's Day, and we end on May 16th. You got a 6-week sprint, and trying to just hold off those other the all comers. It's going to be an interesting run. Hopefully they get healthy. I hope everybody gets healthy, right? Embiid's supposed to play again on Saturday for the Sixers. Just looking across the NBA, you just want to give it a hug. Everybody, get back on the court. Let's have a real finish to the regular season and into the playoffs, please.